From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
King salmon fishing on the Kenai River will be catch and release only in July. The Department of Fish and Game says it's placing restrictions on the late run ahead of the season to meet its escapement goal amid continually dwindling king runs. The preseason forecast for the late run is about 16,000 large fish. It falls below the five-year average and well below the historical average of the run. Area management biologist Colton Lipka says the late run season is starting with the restrictions so Fish and Game can meet its escapement goal of 15,000 to 30,000 large kings.
So when your forecast is 16, and then you look at recent year performance, there's not a lot there to allow harvest opportunity. So that's how we get to the catch and release management action.
The department got flack from guiding groups last year for not starting the late run season under catch and release. Escapement numbers in the last few years have been some of the worst on record. But the department did ultimately change the regulations and later closed the king sport fishery and commercial set net fishery entirely. Meanwhile, the early king run, which peaks in June, is open under general regulations, meaning anglers can use single hook artificial lures without bait to catch kings. The early run season forecast for late run kings is about 4,300 fish in 2022. The escapement goal is between 3,900 and 6,600 fish. For king salmon larger than 20 inches, the bag and possession limit is 1. Under 20 inches, it's 10. Fishermen must release salmon that are at least 34 inches long. Lipka says the early run is smaller than the late run, but he says it's also under less pressure from anglers and other user groups, which changes the calculus.
Some of the mindset we'll have on the early run will change a little bit going into the late run, just accounting for that extra harvest power that's available in July. Even though it is a larger run, there are more people taking a bite of that pie.
Keep in mind, regulations and projections all could change once the season gets underway. Lipka says the department releases regulations early in the year to give anglers and businesses time to plan. The department will also announce restrictions on the Kaseelof River. You can see those all on the department's website.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Southeast Alaska's upcoming Tanner crab fishery looks very promising. The fishery starts on February 11th, and as Angela Denning reports, the harvest and price could be historic.
State crab managers haven't seen this kind of encouraging preview for Southeast's Tanner crab fishery for a few decades. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has tracked the Tanner population through annual surveys since the late 1990s.
What we're seeing is kind of historically high levels.
Joe Stratman is the lead crab manager for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in the region. He says the numbers look like they did when the surveys first started. The abundance estimate for the fishery is 5.81 million pounds. That represents the estimated mature male crab, which is a 17% increase over last year. The news has fishermen eagerly preparing their boats and assembling their crews.
I know folks are excited to get out there and set some gear.
It's not only the harvest that looks good, but also the price. What's paid for the crab could break records if it follows the trend in other fisheries. In Kodiak, Tanner brought over $8 a pound in January, which is about double what was paid last year. And Southeast's Dungeness crab fishery last summer also saw record prices at over $4 per pound. That's more than what was paid for Tanner last February, which averaged $3.37 per pound. Still, last year's Tanner fishery was worth a lot, valued at $4.26 million. It brought in nearly 1.3 million pounds of crab, which is a bit above the 10-year average. The male biomass at the biologist track includes both mature and legal-sized crab. So even though some crab are too young to be sold commercially, Stratman says it shows that the population is steady.
So there's always a kind of a cohort of crab that's coming along behind the legal crab. And luckily in Southeast, we see that consistently in our crab surveys.
The length of the fishery will depend on the number of permits and pots. Fishermen have until the opening day to register. Another crab fishery is happening alongside the Tanner fishery in Southeast. That's for golden king crab. The fishery is much smaller, with only 15 permits participating last year, but it's still valuable. Last year, the fishery was worth $700,000 at $11.55 per pound. The harvest, however, was well below the 10-year average at 61,000 pounds. The golden king crab fishery includes 7 harvest goal areas in Southeast, which can be closed by managers before or during the season. The northern area is already closed this year. The total harvest goal for goldens is 75,300 pounds for the region. That's better than last year, but still considered low. The golden kings are a slow-growing crab, and they don't reach maturity until 8 years of age. They also don't follow annual reproduction cycles, like many other species, says Stratman.
Their reproductive cycle doesn't really conform to a calendar. We think it's about 20 months.
Fish and Game relies on harvest data to manage the golden fishery because they don't do surveys on the crab. Harvests have fluctuated widely since the fishery began in the 1970s. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Vessels are heading into the Gulf of Alaska this winter to study the impacts of climate change on Pacific salmon. The expedition is not the first international effort of its kind, but it will likely be the largest, uniting several countries in pursuit of clues about what changing ocean conditions do to salmon while they're out at sea. KDLL's Sabine Pooks reports.
Ed Farley studies salmon habitat with NOAA Fisheries in Juneau. He's joining the effort from the Bell M. Shimada, a NOAA research vessel leaving Port Angeles, Washington, Tuesday.
These surveys really give us a glimpse at, you know, what the future may hold. That's why I'm out there.
The expedition comes on the heels of years of heat waves in the Gulf of Alaska. At the same time, salmon stocks are struggling throughout the region, from declining runs in Cook Inlet to devastating crashes in western Alaska. Scientists know winter is an important time for the species. It's when stocks from around the sea mingle and compete for food in the Gulf. But there's still a lot to learn about what happens to salmon while they're there and how ocean conditions impact the survivability of the species.
We've had summer surveys and coastal surveys where we can see impacts on the food web, but we really have not been out in the central Gulf, especially in winter when this next critical period is occurring, to see, you know, what may have happened to fish or salmon specifically in that environment.
Farley wants to know how warmer ocean temperatures will impact salmon going forward. Ocean warming is only expected to get worse with time. Heat waves that are now anomalous could be previews of what's to come. He says there's certain information scientists can only catch if they're out at sea. The Shimada will use a rope trawl to capture salmon and take samples to see what they're eating.
And from there, we can tell whether or not these fish are stressed.
They're also going to use a new research technique called environmental DNA, or eDNA, to see what other animals are part of the salmon's ocean ecosystem. eDNA is genetic material that animals shed into their environments. University of British Columbia biologist Christoph Deeg said at a presentation recently that some salmon predators are too smart or too fast to get caught otherwise.
So these are species that are really difficult to get a handle on when you are using conventional methods like capturing them in a net.
But they do leave traces of genetic material that vary depending on their species. One salmon predator, the salmon shark, has only ever been detected in the Gulf with eDNA, Deeg says. Scientists will capture eDNA samples from nearly 200 stations at multiple depths during the expedition. Farley's hopping on the Shimada in Ketchikan for its first leg. He'll be on the boat for 11 days, disembarking in Kodiak. His crew will be joined at sea by vessels and scientists from Russia, Japan, the Republic of Korea, and Canada. And altogether, they'll cover an area spanning west of Adak down to the eastern part of the Gulf of Alaska. Farley says the international cooperation is crucial. Fish don't recognize borders.
Stocks from all around the Pacific Rim are intermingling with each other, so it's really important to have an international effort to understand the impact of climate variability and change on our ecosystems and what's going on during winter.
Together, they can cover more ground or sea than they ever have before. To track the Shimada's journey, visit yearofthesalmon.org/2022expedition. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Thanks this week to KDLL's Sabine Pooks, KFSK's Angela Denning, and musicians Craig Padilla, Marvin Allen, and Ryan Murdoch. Thanks, everyone.